Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of August 7th, and with me late on a Saturday night is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Saturday night's all right for fighting, babe.
Well, I got no fight in me. My pillow keeps calling me, and I keep telling it to wait, so.
That's a delaying action. That's not a battle you're going to win.
I'm going to have late movement.
Okay, I won't swing, man. I stay off that puppy.
Lay off. But yeah, it's going to be in the zone, though. I didn't say it was going to be late moving out of the zone.
Okay.
I'm dropping it right in there, man.
You're dreaming.
Already. All right. On this week's show, we have a chat with Dennis Sarfati for the second time this year. And we're going to talk about SoftBank. We're going to talk about the red hot Cebu Lions. Talk about our Sawamura Award candidates and a whole lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. So on Monday, I went out to Tokyo Dome because the SoftBank Hawks were having a rare Tokyo Dome home game, which they do every year. And in fact, don't they usually wear one of those weird jerseys, the colored?
Yeah, the weird victory colors? Yeah, the victory blue or the, I don't know what, the quality
something
quince.
Something purple or something gold.
Call it quality quince or whatever.
Right.
And usually, it used to be that, you know, they do it for the SoftBank employees in Tokyo to come and Mr. Son will show up and Mr. O will show up. And
which they did.
And usually, and they hand out, they typically in the past would hand out a bag full of like cheering goods to every SoftBank employee who shows up. And it used to be the line leaving Tokyo Dome of people with bags was just as big as the line coming in. But they did something this time, and I think they might have given everybody a bonus for staying past a certain inning because they set a Tokyo Dome attendance record this year. I'm sure they did it just to annoy the Yomiuri Giants. So they had one game. They had a Monday night game, and they set the Dome's attendance record for the season.
Wow. Yeah. Yes. And caught up with you there for a quick second. Of course, you were doing other things and going a different direction. And
right. I was off to the office.
Yeah, and it just turned out to be a wild day, but hey, it was fun.
And it turned out that that none of the people I wanted to talk to I could talk to. So it was, I put my database on my colleague's computer, and that was about my entire work day. Oh, it was the Kokubo press conference at Kokubo. I keep calling
exactly,
it Kokubo.
Yes.
Inaba, the Atsunori Inaba Japan national team manager press conference.
Exactly,
which
yes.
Which was... more interesting than previous ones, which is a very low bar.
Well, then we'll shuffle our feet over that bar. But anyway, so I did talk to Dennis. I know we had him on the show in April this year, show 11. But about a month ago, he had this big milestone where he reached 200 saves. And so I wanted to bring him back on the show. Plus, he's just an awesome person. Full of energy, full of enthusiasm, and he's great to talk to.
Yes,
and
indeed.
We sat down, and he has the most saves by a foreign pitcher in NPB history. He surpassed the 200 save mark on July 5th. It was a 5-3 win over the Oryx Buffaloes, and he became the sixth pitcher to reach that mark. The first foreign pitcher to do it, obviously. He's having a great season. You'll hear him talk about how physically fit he is. And how he's like at the top of his game this year. So let's take a listen to what he had to say.
We're very thrilled again to be sitting down with Dennis Sarfati of the SoftBank Hawks, the closer premier in Japan. How are you today?
I'm good. Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. I always ask you how you are physically, but I've been watching you pitch recently, and I think you're fine. So I'm going to ask you this time, how are you mentally?
Mentally, I'm good. I feel like this year's been better. I don't throw so much. I think I only have 41 games, and I think last year at the All-Star break, I had 41 games or close to it. It's been a blessing this year that we have guys that they trust and allowed me not to pitch in the four-run games and a lot of the tie games. But, you know, when you play on a team as good as ours, you have to be mentally ready every day because, I mean, I expect every day a chance to win, especially with the starters that we have. So mentally, you know, I'm there. You know, off days, I take those days and I rest. It hasn't been such a grind. So mentally I'm good. Physically I feel great. I feel like, man, as I get older, I get better physically wise, which I don't know how that's possible. Even though every year I've had little things that come up, this year I feel really strong and just fortunate and blessed that I am where I am.
You look at it, I can tell. All right, now you have the most saves as a foreign pitcher. Obviously, you set that record this year and you hit the 200 milestone. What stands out to you about this achievement?
Oh, man, I guess the health. I mean, longevity. Anytime that you talk about when you're breaking records over a course of the time, yeah, the team has a lot to do with it. They win the games. If my team wasn't as good as they are, I wouldn't have the opportunities. But just staying healthy, being on the field and taking the ball every time I have a chance. 60-plus games 3 years in a row. I think I'm on my way there again this year. And the longevity that you have to have as a closer with the abuse that you take, warming up. I mean, I warmed up the two games prior, mm-hmm. and then we scored a run in the eighth and then scored a run in the ninth, and then I sit down. So just the health and the longevity is probably the biggest thing, because if you're healthy, you always have a chance. But if you're hurt and you're spending time on the DL, you're never going to have a chance. So I think that's the best thing about playing. If you can stay healthy, and guys that have great careers, and you look, for the most part, they've stayed healthy their career.
Now, you were on the podium that night as one of the heroes, and what do you remember about that save in particular, about that game?
Almost crying, I think, you bring my, I think about my wife and my kids and not being here, and the problems my wife's had with her health so far this year, and being alone this whole year to deal with that, and they still aren't in Japan, so I've seen my wife and kids 10 days out of 6 months, and just to accomplish that, not to have anyone, I guess that was the biggest thing, trying to hold back the tears and fight them back. But then a sense of relief, because, I mean, I needed three saves in the beginning of the year to pass Kroon, and I did it the first three games of the year. And then I feel like everyone was, like, lurking around, when's the 200 save going to come? And then I feel like five saves came in a matter of, like, a week, and it was like, here, I have a chance to do it at home. And I think that was the biggest thing, too, is to be able to do it at home in front of my home fans. It was special, and the way we did it, the way we won, and it was just, the whole thing's memorable.
Okay, now we see pitchers come over here from the States or wherever, and they pitch in the bullpen, and they pitch as a starter, and then they go back to the bullpen. You've been able to come over here and be a reliever and mostly in the same role for a long time. How do you prepare for these teams, and how do you do this night after night?
Now I've kind of, as you get older, you kind of start realizing that this is still just a game and you have to enjoy it. You got to take the good with the bad. And, when I was younger, I used to go into each game like it was the last game of my career. And I had to do my best and I had to get three outs and I had to strike everyone out. And now it's just like, it ain't the end of the world. If I blow a game, I blow a game. And I feel like with that attitude going into a game, it actually makes me better, because there's nothing that's against me anymore. If I blow it, I blow it. If I do well, I do well. God's going to get the glory out of it no matter what I do. And I think it's just gotten easier that, because I'm not putting so much pressure on myself. There's already enough pressure on me when I go into the game in the ninth. I don't need to add into it. So I think that's been the biggest thing. And, scouting reports, these guys, what me watching the hitters now and understanding what hitters are trying to do, and not being that typical foreigner that comes here and thinks you're just going to blow guys away with heaters. It's, I use my forkball and curveball more than anything now. And I think that's been a real reason why I've struck so many guys out lately. This month alone, I think I have 23 strikeouts. So I think it's just my catchers, the way they call the games. I don't shake, so it's never me like shaking to certain pitches.
Right.
So it's just me trusting them and trusting my ability, trusting my stuff, and not walking guys. I think is probably the biggest thing, is I don't walk guys anymore. So that makes these guys swing. And right now I'm averaging 14 pitches per inning. And if I can do that for a whole season, that means my arm's staying fresh, and that means, I have a chance to stay healthy.
All right, now how do you prepare for all these guys? Here we got the Fighters here tonight, and they've got a new player on the team, and the guys come up from the farm. How do you prepare for the whole roster? Because you could face anybody.
Yeah, for me, I don't care who the hitter is. That's one thing I know who the hitters are that I have to be careful with. In a one-run game yesterday, coming in second and third, facing Laird, I know I got to make better pitches. Facing Nakata in a one-run game, there are guys in the league that I know, okay, I got to make a good pitch here when I face Peguero a couple of times. And then the other ones, I'm sticking with my strengths. I don't care if the guy can hit fastballs and that's all he's looking for. I'm going to throw you a fastball. Like, I know that's what Yano's coming in there to do yesterday, and I'm still going to stick to my strengths. And I honestly believe that pitching, if you stick to your strengths, you're better than the hitter 9 out of 10 times, because hitting is extremely hard. Besides the, you know, the physics side of it, you're hitting a round object with a round object. You have to wait for 4 different pitches sometimes, location, depth, speed, spin, and it's like
hitting
is so hard. We give hitters too much credit. And I think a lot of the times I've spoken up to our team, and I don't go to scouting meetings anymore. They banned me from them. The biggest thing I tell them is, like, you guys are talking about a hitter for 15 minutes, and you're going to face him 4 times. It's like, stick to your strengths. Throw your fastball down and away. It's the best pitch in baseball, down and away. And if a guy continually beats you with the same pitch, stop throwing it. And that's my theory. I'll face Otani, and I'll throw him the same way that I would throw Pagero, the same way that I would throw Wheeler, the same way that I would throw Romero. Those guys, you have to make pitches. And if you make your pitches, you're going to beat them 9 out of 10 times.
All right, now I looked at your career stats so far in Japan, and I noticed that you've matched your career high in terms of strikeouts per 9 innings. You talked about the 14 pitches per inning. And you're also on record pace for saves in a season. So how are you doing this? You said
I think just,
a second ago, yeah.
I mean, obviously, God's grace in my life, you know, him allowing me to be healthy and stay healthy. But you think about it, this team is so good. I can't take any of the credit as far. I mean, look at who my seventh inning guy is. Look at who Yuito Mori, Shohei Iwasaki. They give me a chance every time.
Yeah, but they're not the guys who have got your career case to 9 up.
Yeah, the first person I would thank, and I've said this in a few interviews recently, is Toru Hosokawa.
Okay.
Yeah, that guy challenged me the first day I got to the Hawks. You know, he challenged me to throw first pitch forkball. He challenged me to throw 2 in a row. He challenged me to throw behind 1-0 in the count.
And so why is it coming through this year?
I don't know. I think I've done it. I think I just rely on it more. Last year I did it. I mean, 2 years ago I had 102 strikeouts during the season, and he was catching me for majority of the time, and Takaya was, and I used it. And I think, you know, this year I'm healthier. Last year I had a pulled groin, abdominal strain. And so this year I'm healthy. My velocity is better. It's better than it was last year.
I noticed
that. It's almost back to where it was 2 years ago.
Yep.
And so that, with the forkball that I'm throwing out and my curveball, you know, it gives me 3 pitches. And it's tough to go into a game and now you're facing the closer and he's got 3 pitches that he can throw. And I feel comfortable throwing them in first pitch, second. It doesn't matter when I throw it. So is it me? Yeah, I mean, obviously my abilities is shining right now, but my catchers are doing a great job knowing the hitters. And it's just working. It really is. It's working out that way.
Okay. Now, do you know who holds the mark for saves in a season and how many it is?
Iwase and Fujikawa, 46.
And you're on pace to surpass both of them. So, I mean, I know you want to get to at least 250.
Career. I got one more year left in this deal. Whether I come back after next year or not is up. I don't know yet. I haven't made a decision yet. I know there's a lot of interest back home. I could just go home after next year and just retire. Is 250 a reachable thing? Yeah. Is 46 reachable? I have 32 now. We have about 50 games. If I were to save a third of those games, I guess I would have a chance. I hope our team scores 10 runs a game over the next 50 games, and I don't have to. But to me, that's at least, if I get a save record, I'm doing my job, which is helping the team, which for me is number one. As long as we're winning, I don't care if it's by 3, 2, 1, or 10 runs. I would rather just win and finish in first. But I know I have a chance. Everyone keeps talking about it now, and I just feel like it's another thing that everyone's going to, you know, hound about, like my teammates. You have a chance to get the record.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, all right, if I get close and we have, you know, 20 games left and I'm 1 or 2 away, I'll think about it. But when I'm still 14 away from tying it with, you know, I can't even fathom, like 14 more saves right now, it seems like so far away, because it's like, We're in July, you know.
Right,
I know,
right.
It's
going
to be August
are.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
But if I did, I'm breaking a record at 2 guys that I have a high, you know, a high respect for. Fujikawa has always treated me with respect since I first got to the cart, and Iwase has also been a guy that you can see what he's done over his career, longevity wise. And it would be a blessing, and it'd be a treat for me to be able to pass that for sure.
All right, they put that home run terrace in Fukuoka. It really hasn't bothered you that much, but you've given up 2 home runs this year. Who hit them?
Takeda and Matsuyama, both on the road and both in non-safe
situations. Right. All right. So how do you feel about that home run terrace, though?
To me, it doesn't bother. I mean, I've gotten into games because we score. We hit a home run in the 8th inning, you know. The other day, it gave me a day off. Gita hit one into it, and we scored that 4th run, and I don't have to pitch. So to me, it makes it more interesting. Do I care? No, because if you hit a home run off me, it's going to go no matter what. I mean, it's my velocity versus you. If I hang a pitch, you give up a home run, you give up a home run. I'm sure the guys feel the same way here in the Tokyo Dome. If you give up a home run and it barely goes out by, if it goes out by one row or 30 rows, it's still a home run. So for me, I don't care. I don't ever think about the field I'm at, how far the fences are. I just got to make pitches, and if they hit it, they hit it.
All right, now Ishikawa told Jim that the best advice he's gotten from another player was from you about keeping things simple. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, that's good if I can help him. You know, I these guys get so much information and so much stuff.
You're telling me.
Every day they got to do them. They're, oh, you're tipping or your mechanics are off or this or that. Keep it simple. Come set, come to your balance, throw the ball right through the catcher, and that's all you think about. It's when I start thinking about, oh, I got to do this, and it throws me off. So I always tell guys, keep it simple. Pitching's hard enough as it is. We have the advantage over the hitters. We just got to stick to our strengths.
Now, how much mentoring do you do, and how do the coaches feel about it?
I do a lot. I know I've probably butted in on a few conversations that I probably shouldn't have, but for me, hey, I've 18 years playing professionally. I'm not going to shy away from, if I think something's wrong and they're telling something wrong, I'm going to say, hey, I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to help. And sometimes the way I say it might be different from the way they see it, but we might be trying to get the same result. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, I've had plenty of pitching coaches in my career, you know, tell me, hey, you got to do this, you got to do that. And it's eight different guys telling me the same purpose, but a different way. And for me, I have to listen to them. And it might click the one time. And to me, for these guys, if I can tell them one thing and it clicks, then great. All I'm trying to do is help. I'm not trying to hurt someone or hinder them. I just want to help them. And if I can do that, then I've done my job as a veteran.
All right, I just want to follow up now. What did you do to get banned from the meetings?
Well, one time I think I fell asleep. I think I nodded off.
That's good.
For me, I just don't want to watch. You watch all the success. So you're watching hitting meetings and you're watching all the pitches that they've crushed and you're watching home run after home run. And I just don't feel like that puts an impressive thought into your mind that you want to have. You don't want that impression in your head. And so for me, it's like I don't need to hear what they're going to do, because for me, I'm different from anyone that's on my pitching staff. And I'm not going to shy away from throwing a guy a heater. Like for me, I go in there face Laird yesterday. I'm probably the only one that's going to throw him first two pitches of fastball.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to listen to them. They don't need to tell me how to pitch. I just know I watch the most video out of anyone on the team, and they know that because we have the video tracker, and they can tell who watches the most, and I watch it number one. And so they know I'm doing my work, and so what are you going to do?
You're going to have success on the mound. Right. All right, buddy. Thanks a lot for your time. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Dennis. I only got to say hi to him. I said, you know, I was standing sitting there with my friends, and I said, hi, Dennis. He said, hi, Jim. And my friend was going, he calls you Jim. I said, that's my name, dude.
That's my name, dude.
Yeah. Well, I call Akinori Iwamura, dude, so there.
So there. All right. Well, thank you very much again, Dennis. We always appreciate talking to you. And Jim, what did you find most interesting about this week's chat?
Well, first of all, great question, and great the whole bit about being banned from meetings. I mean, there was a lot, and you know, being even older than Dennis Sarfate,
both of us,
not put together, mind you, but being older than Dennis Sarfate, I completely dug the bit about being older but stronger.
Mm.
I did go through that phase at one point of my life. But staying, you know, he's all about living in the moment, you know, enjoying it for what it is. I really appreciate that. I think as I get older, I appreciate it more.
Right.
And so I think his perspective, or I should say his view on how his perspective changes as he ages was quite poignant. It will be more so for the listeners as they get older as well. But I think the thing that interested me most was the bit about being banned from the meetings.
Yeah, I thought it was very entertaining.
Yeah, as soon as I heard that, I thought, oh, okay, now how did that happen?
Yeah, I thought about coming back at him right away, but I couldn't walk away from the interview. The more I thought about it, because a lot of times I don't follow up the questions because I want to get through our questions and then talk about them on the show. But I had to follow that one up, yeah.
I had to be thinking, I had to be thinking, what did he say? I'm thinking, did you say, just stop listening to these people? but you know, one of the things, and I don't need to repeat what he said, but I won't be surprised that at some point when he has a bad game or he has two bad games in a row, that some coach will say, well, that's because he wasn't at the meeting.
Oh, yeah.
and it's not because the coach thinks it's because he wasn't at the meeting. It's because Japan has a culture avoiding personal accountability.
Okay.
And if you can, and so, you know, there's this whole double system of communication where your real thought, your real meaning is hidden under the socially acceptable tatemae, you know, this face-saving language, which is very often a case of don't ask me. It's don't ask, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't ask me if I give your permission, if you don't ask me for permission, you can do it.
Right, I don't have to tell you no.
That's right. And then if you mess up, it's your fault. But I'm covered. You know, it's this whole bit of cover your ass. And Japan just, I don't know if it thrives on it, but it's part of the grease that Japanese society functions on. And oddly enough, in baseball, it's, you would think, when Trey Hillman went to Sapporo, you know, that was the thing he fought probably hardest against. And Marty Brown told me the same thing in Hiroshima and Sendai, the idea that, well, he said it was okay. You know, well, who's responsible? Oh, well, we don't have that system. And so they both had to sort of, I think Marty butted his head against the wall and Trey was able to do something about it because of the people he was working with. But I think, you know, when I think about this, in Japan, we often, in Japanese companies, we often do things that don't matter or are counterproductive.
Right.
In order to avoid blame.
Right.
And so I'm
hard to explain. Yeah, hard to explain to our foreign listeners, but it,
right.
But I'm
but
sure
the point is, it's sort of like in America, you know, if you have sometimes at a job, you're expected to look busy rather than be busy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listener, I'm sure a lot of listeners can say, or how was it Mr. Rogers used to say? Can you say sacrifice bunt? Because that's what it amounts to. Let's do things that we know are wrong, but which we'll never be blamed for.
Right.
Whereas if we do the things we know are right, we will be blamed. And so if in that small percentage, you know, that when the percentages go against us, which is often in baseball, even though you do the right thing, they don't always work.
Mm-hmm.
People will blame you for doing the right thing because you didn't do the face-saving thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was what I was thinking.
It's profound, but it's what happens. Yeah. So.
So they have to have long. They have to have long meetings. With the longer meetings, the better, because well, we told them we had a really long meeting, and how come you couldn't? And so any problem with execution was the pitcher's problem. Okay.
Right.
That's all. Okay.
Okay. So I like two things that he said, and I think they were kind of subtle. They weren't, they were more backdoor slider than they were, you know, straight fastball, which is different for him. But one was the fact that he talked about throwing in the bullpen. And these pitches that we don't see, I mean, it reminded me that basically in Japan there are a lot of stadiums and domes where we can't see who's warming up. We have no idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, essentially, especially if you're there as a fan, if you're there as a reporter, sometimes there's a monitor in the press box, and you can, if they happen to show it on the TV broadcast, and
right.
You can see who's warming up.
Yeah. Then, sometimes, right. Yes. Or sometimes you can see it on the dugout, the view of the dugout, where you can see the dugout cameras showing the bullpens.
Yeah, but you can see that someone is warming up, but you can't see who it is. And you can guess if it's, you know, what inning, depending on the inning, you might be able to calculate and figure it out.
Well, let me ask you then, how many stadiums in Japan can you see the bullpens? from the stands.
Jingu, MetLife Dome, and as far
Rock
as...
Rock 10's closed, but you can still see it. It's covered, but you can still see it. It's next to the field.
And we're talking about the stadiums in the normal rotation, not the regional stadiums.
Right.
That's all I can think of, to be honest.
That's it. Yeah. It's them three.
Yeah. So basically you can't, you really don't see. And so you don't know, those pitches, they go uncounted because they're not in games. They're not competition pitches, but your body counts them. And that's what he was talking about.
Is wow.
That, you know, you get up and he gets warm and, you know, he's ready to go in a game. You know, let's go to work. So getting up to him, to me, it sounded like he said, hey, if I get up, I don't want to not be used. And those pitches, those pitches actually count on my body here. I can't erase them. You know, I've thrown them.
Yep.
My body knows that I've thrown them, and it takes a little bit away. And the other thing, the other thing he said that stuck with me was about his wife and kids not being there in Japan when he broke this record, hit 200 saves, hit the milestone, and. You know, I always want to remind our listeners that these guys, you know, we they go to the ballpark, they work, and they really want to win, and they really work hard, and they compete. But I just love this aspect adding to the humanization of these players, letting us know that they actually, you know, you hit them with these comments and they bleed, you know.
And true, so true.
Yeah, and so that was a big thing, because I thought he was going to say something else about the moment, and he said, you know, you get the typical comment is, well, my teammates did a great job of putting me in this position, guys made plays behind me, I was able to execute enough to get to this milestone. No, he says my wife and children weren't there, you know, it was just really weird.
Yeah, and, it's like he's just like us.
Yeah, he's like a person, yeah.
Indeed.
And I really like how he knows the guys who had hit home runs off of him. And, you know, Kengo Takeda of Oryx and Ryuhei Matsuyama of Hiroshima. And those were the two guys who had hit home runs up until Stefan Romero. These other two guys, Takeda and Matsuyama, they're not really sluggers. They're not power hitters, although Matsuyama has pretty good power. Takeda is not. I mean, it was only his second home run of his career, or his short career, but nonetheless, not a power hitter. Matsuyama might hit
Takeda.
Takeda.
Takeda, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Takeda. And then Matsuyama might hit you, I don't know, maybe 10, between 10
he's
and
he's got
20.
Medium range. If he played a full season, he's probably a 25 home run guy, but he's a, you know, because he platoons a lot.
Right. Well, I don't know that 25. If he played regularly, I still give him between 10 and 20, but that's about the same. It's about the same. Yeah, he gave up a walk-off home run to Stefan Romero this past week, and then on Saturday here tonight, he came in with runners all over the bases and couldn't stop the Lions' momentum. We'll get to that game later, but he's going to get credited for a blown save, but I don't blame him. I blame the manager. But anyway, it's nice to talk to him. Like I said before, he's got so much energy, so much enthusiasm. And at the end of the interview, you hear him, I say thanks a lot for your time, and he's distracted because there's a little girl in the dugout. You know how they have families, they invite families to, actually just members of the general public to be on the field and in the dugouts before games sometimes. There's a little girl, and so he's giving her a wristband as a present, and he just gets distracted and he's gone. And that's why you don't hear him say anything about, yeah, good to talk to you and appreciate it or anything at the end. It's just me. And he kind of fades out because he's giving this little girl a wristband as a present.
Cool.
It was really sweet. Yeah.
Now, he's always one of my favorite interviews. And it's, you know, it's hard to fight the desire to, you know, want to have on every week pretty much. But and if we did, he would be great, as gracious about it as ever. It's, you know, just congratulations to him and, you know, and good luck. And as I say to all the players after I interview him, you know, good health and good luck.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I always say that too. And you know, the other thing I did want to mention is I you know, you talked about him being banned from the meetings and all that stuff, and him saying that he just sticks to what he does best, and that it's so hard to hit in the first place that 9 out of 10 times you're going to have success. And I really, you know, even though the stats might not bear that out, because you have to have some talent. I mean, you have to have some ability and some luck too, because if guys are not striking everybody out, then you need players behind you to make plays. And that's the other hard thing about hitting, is that you've got at least 8 guys, but, you know, I don't really always count the catcher, because you're not really, if the catcher's throwing you out, then you really haven't hit the ball very hard. But, you know, you've got 8 guys after the pitch is thrown trying to do everything they can to stop you from reaching base. So it makes it even more difficult to hit. And so, but I like what he said about, hey, just worrying about what you do and throwing your pitches and executing the pitches instead of worrying about all the other stuff. Because it did seem strange to me. I didn't realize that they play a bunch of video of guys crushing pitches and say, okay, don't do this and don't do that. it would make more sense to me if they were saying, this is where this guy's weak spots are, and showing guys hitting the location. That would make a lot more sense to me. But maybe that's just part of the story. Maybe we don't know the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say.
And wow, that, very good.
That's probably what they do, is show a little bit of both. But yeah, it does. It just puts a bad image in your head to go out there to face some of these guys. You know, I can't throw it here. I can't throw it here. And then you end up, you know, throwing.
Yeah, and they wonder why people don't want to pitch to contact, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they all come right out of there looking for the vampire that's going to eat, you know, the werewolf that's going to eat them or something.
All right, well, let's talk about the Hawks a little bit. Now, they moved into first place,
yep,
or eased into first place, because they had that, you know, and again, just for people who wonder what that half game deficit that they had, in Japan, it's your winning percentage that decides first place,
well,
not the game difference.
Same as everywhere else.
Right, but they don't have ties.
Right.
We don't have ties in Major League Baseball.
It's really not the ties. It's the fact that the Hawks have played so many more games.
Well, that too. But remember when the Oryx Buffaloes 3 years ago, I think it was now, that they finished with more victories, but...
Well, that's different.
Well, I mean, because you have ties. They finished with more victories, but they didn't win the league title because...
Because they had lost ties. More games. Yep.
Right.
Yeah, ties don't count in it. And so it's basically, it's just pretty much simple math, you know, the games behind is, it works when your number of games played is very, you know, within about 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
But the Hawks and the Eagles are separated by about 9 games.
Yeah, it's so getting closer,
And if you've got 2 500 teams, again, that doesn't, 2 teams close to 500, it really doesn't matter. But the farther you get away from 500, the harder the games ahead and behind, you know, are, the less they have to bear on reality.
Yeah. You notice the Pacific League standings, you know, I'm not a big standings guy, you know that. All I look at is the game difference or the win difference and the loss difference and all this stuff. But you notice these teams in the Pacific League going into games today, I believe, they were all, the top 3 teams were all over 600.
Yeah, I did notice that today.
And then the loss, the Lions lost their losing streak, I'm sorry, their winning streak, was snapped tonight, and they fell back under 600. But it's just amazing, these teams are, you know, 20 plus games over 500. Anyway, so the Hawks eased into first place, and it just seemed like one night they were down by a half game, and then they win one, and the Eagles lose one, and they were up by a game and a half. It was really weird. But I'm looking at the rotation. We talked about it before, I think 2 years ago, and talked about all the talent and the pitching staff, rotation and relievers, and it's all being tested this year. Kodai Senga spent some time, I guess he had some WBC fatigue or something, and he hasn't been the guy we all expected. Takeda is back from injury, but he hasn't been the shutdown guy we expected.
Wada's been gone.
Tsuyoshi Wada been gone all season. Now Higashihama has been the godsend. He's been their most reliable guy. He's still a quiet, you know, unassuming guy. If you saw him on the street, I don't think anybody could really pick him out and say, "Hey, you're now Higashihama, aren't you?" I don't know how many people could do that. It's just been a real struggle for him. I think Rick Vandenherk, guy I like to call Vanden Hercules, he has
abandoned that nickname, I think.
He's been pretty steady too, actually. I mean, he's 9-5. He leads the team in strikeout rate, batting average against. He's been really, really great for them. But they just haven't dominated on the mound like they have in the past. And yet they're still in first place. And you know, we just go through and talk about how these teams are playing 600, and they're the best out of them. So they are being tested from top to bottom. The system, they keep bringing guys in. They keep giving guys position players a spot start here and there. They're mixing and matching, and they're getting production from seemingly every replacement guy they put out there. Not on a daily basis, but enough. I really like Seiji Uebayashi since his playoff grand slam, I think it was.
Yep.
When I saw him. And he's a fixture out there in right field and has been really good. And I guess middle relief has been kind of iffy for them. Of course, they lost Yota Igarashi. He had to go off the mound, and who knows?
The other day.
When he's going to come back. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly when he's going to be back, but Dennis Sarfati mentioned Yuito. Yuito Mori, who has been good one day and then less effective another day, and Levon Moinero has been pretty effective.
Yep,
and he was really good for them tonight in helping them snap the Lions' winning streak. But Shinya Kayama is doing well. He's got an ERA under one. Well, he had until tonight, maybe. I haven't seen it after tonight's game. But they've just been tested, and they're passing the test.
Well, yeah, I'll give you the rundown. Now, I think of the starters, if you look at NPB,
mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at their ranking, now it's kind of shock to see that the Hawks starters, they have a 3.86 ERA, which is ninth in NPB.
Okay, ninth. Not very good.
That's not very good. There's four teams in a pack: the Lions, the Bay Stars, the Dragons, and SoftBank. And I think if I were to say, probably the worst of that group is the Dragons, because they play in such a good pitcher's park. You really have to, you know, add some air to their ERA. But the Hawks bullpen is number one in Japan,
mm-hmm.
2.10 ERA. They've also thrown almost as many innings. I think they're second in innings in the bullpen. So they're not getting the long innings out of their starters, but they are getting, you know, they're getting generally effective starts. Shuji Ishikawa has been quite good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just waiting to talk. I've been working on an interview for him, and the difficulty I've had this year is that I'm not covering games. It's very hard to talk to players and coaches. I don't have a lot of time to hang around the ballpark unless it's my day off.
Right.
So I'm sort of like, I have to sort of prioritize. I'm going to talk to this person. If it's a coach, I know it's easier, but I don't know. I'm not on good terms. Well, it makes it sound like I've been skipping the meetings or something. I'm not on good terms.
Or falling asleep. You know, that gets you just as much trouble.
Well, I mean, I do talk to the Hawks. You know, I talk to Yoshinori Sato, or I should say he condescends to talk to me. You know, he gives me this like, yeah, I'll answer your question, even though I don't expect much out of it.
Wow.
Gives me that look. And since I'm the other pitching coach, I'm not Shinji Kurano. I'm not familiar with him. So it's not easy. And so I want to talk to one of the coaches or talk to Kudo, but it's a lot of that is timing. So I'm still waiting to do the story on Ishikawa, because he was a fascinating and very interesting young man. So, but I like the guys they're throwing out there, but they're just not they're not the big reliable horses we're used to seeing from SoftBank, but I'm not really concerned about their starting rotation too much.
Right, and even Sho Iwasaki, he's been really, really good for them out of the bullpen, quietly. You know,
that's a transition that they've been working on for a couple of years, and he's been slowly getting better at it. He was kind of a failed starter. His career was really messed up by the return to the lively ball.
Mm.
In 2013, he was getting really, really used to throwing this big, like this beanbag.
Right.
People couldn't hit very far.
Right. I think, yeah. I thought a lot of people were, more. A lot of pitchers were in favor of that thing. The beanbag. Yeah, but these guys, like I said, even Moreno, he's been pretty effective for them. They're getting what they need,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting enough, and then they're getting enough offensive production, and even when they struggled in this game tonight, they got enough pitching and scrambled up a run and won the game. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I have a friend at the office who's a big Eagles fan, and I've been telling him all year, even though his team has been mostly in first place, I keep saying, well, you know, don't worry about it. Don't worry about the injuries. Don't worry about this, that, and the other. SoftBank's going to win. just don't worry. And I've been joking with him the whole season. He says, no, it's, you know, SoftBank's year. I'm sorry, it's Rakuten's year. The Eagles are going to pull it off some way, somehow. And I say, hey, look, I'm rooting for you, man. I'm rooting for you. I don't mind being wrong. I've been wrong 100 times. I'm going to be wrong 100 more times. Enjoy the season. So
100?
Oh, 1,000? Who's counting?
Okay, that's exactly right. Nobody's counting. I was just trying to insert a little doubt into that equation.
All right.
Okay.
Well, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about these Lions who went wild for a while. 13-game winning streak, the longest for the club in 59 years. They were trying to get to 14 and tied the club record for longest winning streak, and they lost 8-7 on Saturday night. The Hawks had a 7-1 lead at one point in this game.
Mm.
And then
they had a 7-run lead
in the eighth inning.
In the sixth inning.
Well, thank God they made it 7-1 in the sixth. I'm sorry, in the seventh inning they made it.
The seventh inning, okay.
And in the eighth inning they gave up 2 runs, and then in the ninth inning. Now this is where I thought Kudo was playing with fire, Kimiyasu Kudo, the manager. And you know, I don't like messing with hot teams. I would have brought Sarfate in. Even though it wasn't a save situation, I would have brought him in to start the inning and just get out of there with this win and snap that streak, because they had lost him. Now, here's the other thing about this streak. I really wasn't impressed with it. In fact, you know, I wanted to tell the listeners that I had all this data and I was going to talk about them in last week's mini tracks section, and we just never got to it and we ran out of time. And I said, well, you know, they're going to play the Eagles. They're going to lose anyway. Mm. And they ended up sweeping the Eagles. So, and then the
101.
I'm sorry?
101.
101 what?
Times you were wrong. I'm counting.
Hashtag high heat. Just, you know, between you and my pillow, you know, calling me. So, anyway, it's just a land of confusion here. You just throw 101 out there. What, Dalmatians? Where are they? So I'm thinking they're not going to, this winning streak isn't going to last, because, I wasn't impressed, because they started out by playing the three teams below them in the standings, including the Fighters. They started off with a sweep of the Fighters, and I thought, well, the Fighters have been awful. And then they played the Marines at Zozo Marine Stadium, and, you know, they got a 1-run game in the opener, and then the other ones weren't all that close. And so I said, okay, 6 games, blah, blah, blah. And then we basically did the show, and I thought they were going to lose to the Eagles, which I said, and they swept them. So
And they beat them really really good.
Yeah, pretty handy.
They whipped them.
Yeah, and the Eagles were slumping. So, and then SoftBank came to town, and I'm like, this is getting serious. And, you know, obviously, today they lost Kodai Senga, the starter for the Hawks, held him down pretty good. I've got some notes on paper. I know everybody likes my little paper notes and likes to hear the sound of the paper. So, Yusei Kikuchi won 3 games during the streak, which was really good. Only one reliever won a game during the streak. All the other wins went to starting pitchers. And they outscored opponents 85-28 during the streak. So when you look at it in that perspective, it was really, really impressive. And we've got a lot of home runs. They average more than 6 runs a game in this streak. But Ernesto Mejia only hit 1 home run during this this parade of victories, which is
kind
of
big. And he was actually sent down to the farm today.
Yeah, which is kind of shocking. It's just all shocking. And then Hotaka Yamakawa decided to make the series against the Eagles his own little bash party, including 3 home runs in 1 game. They just were really impressive. They didn't do it all with the arms. They didn't do it all with the bats. They had 3 shutouts. They had two games with only 1 run allowed, and then 3 games with 2 runs allowed. So they were really good. You know, they turned it around. Now, does this streak like this remind you of anything that happened last year?
Should it?
Like the Fighters having a 15-game winning streak and having that...
Well, I saw your post
into the
Well, I saw your post, and I think it's valid.
Was that me? I didn't post anything about it.
Oh, wasn't you? Perhaps that was Jason Coscrew then, who was posting basically the last teams that had won. I think it was 10 games or more. And I've said this before: 10 games is a pretty maybe less so because the league is smaller. But if you win 10, the chances of winning, the chances of a bad team, of a below 500 team winning 10 games, is really low. I mean, like abysmally low, probably in the area of several 100,000 to 1. It kind of separates. You know, when you win 6 games, okay, maybe the worst teams might not win 6 games in a row, but like you said, they could be playing the Buffaloes on a bad week and the Marines on a bad week, and that's pretty much 6 games wins right there. But yeah, 10 games is generally the threshold. 11 games, 12 games, those are teams of quality. Bad teams don't do it, and I don't mean teams of quality like they've got a deep farm system or, you know, the other things we talk about, but, you know, teams that have that are going to be able to get it done on the field consistently. And basically somebody was saying that I don't know how many times the last 6 or 7 teams that won 10 games in a row finished in the playoffs, which again doesn't surprise me. So I would be surprised if a team that wins 13 games in a row is not in the postseason. But, you know, the postseason is a different animal too. So, but having said that, yeah, it's a mark of quality. Right. It doesn't say anything about next year's team.
No. Yeah. But, they inched up in the standings. They got a little bit closer. They've gotten this race to a point where they're going to play the Hawks and the Eagles a lot more this month. And if they can continue, I mean, obviously they're 1-1 in this series that will end tomorrow, which is Sunday. So by the time you guys hear this, it'll be done already. But, you know, they've got a chance to play the teams ahead of them and make an impact on those teams. So they've gotten themselves relevant in the pennant title chase. I just don't know that they can overcome 2 of these teams and win. But they're certainly up there, and close to 600 ball. That's very impressive.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see him finish second. I mean, one of the things we go back to the pitching and going back to the Lions in general. The Lions, the second best bullpen in Japan belongs to the Lions, which would not have occurred to me.
No, I'm with you.
And they're. They also play in a fairly good hitter's park, and their starter's ERA is about a tenth of a run less than the Hawks. And here's the thing: when I was looking at the, you know, I was well, maybe it's sort of a circular argument, but I was looking at the players of the month, and you know, and who's candidate. We'll get to that briefly. But when you look at like who scored the most runs and who's driven in the most runs in the Pacific League, it's like, is there anybody here who doesn't play for the Lions?
Yeah.
It's a logjam. It's a logjam of Lions hitters doing all the, you know, crossing the plate.
Yep.
So it is a surprise to think that I would be quite surprised that they don't make it to the playoffs. Well, especially when, as you said earlier, three of the teams in the Pacific League entered today's play at 600, and Oryx is just hanging on over 400.
Right. Yeah. So, I think they're going to make the playoffs for sure. I think it's a matter of what spot they're in, what slot they can get, how high they can reach. Yeah.
But that's But are they as good as the Eagles? I don't think they're not. I think they're just as good as the Eagles. They could finish ahead of both of those teams. I don't. So no, I mean it's not beyond the realm of possibility that the Lions could finish ahead of those two teams because weirder things have happened.
Yep. All right, so let's make a four-seam transition now and talk about our top Sawamura candidates. So
okay.
I'm going to let you go first, but I think I might have one surprise in there for you.
Wow, a surprise. I like surprises. Well,
there's some obvious candidates, that's why. But
there are fairly obvious candidates, and I think, one of the guys who basically is a Sawamura caliber pitcher who's never won the Sawamura for two reasons. One, he's gotten lousy run support and he never pitches a lot of innings. And that's Tomoyuki Sugano at the Giants. And so he's right now looking like he's the obvious candidate to win it this year.
You mean what do you mean he never pitches a lot of innings? He never gets. I mean, he's missed some time. I think.
Yeah. Well, that's starts. What I said.
Because he pitches a lot of innings in his starts, he just has to end up missing some.
Well, no. What I said is exactly what I meant. A fairly open thing. He at the end of the season. Now the Sawamura Award has these category, you know, these benchmarks, and then the seven benchmarks, of which one, 25 starts, is fairly ridiculous because almost every starting rotation pitcher is going to start 25 games, win 15 or more games, complete 10 or more, which is now pretty much ridiculous because that happens about once every 2 or 3 years that a pitcher will complete 10 games.
And it's so specialized now that they don't even let them go. Even if they shut a team out for 8 innings, it's like, thank you very much. You've done great work. See you next time. Yeah.
Oddly enough.
Unless a guy has a no-hitter.
Right. A no-hitter or one-hitter, or he's, you know, if he's under, you know, if he's under 100 pitches, they'll usually let him throw the ninth inning. Winning percentage of 600 or higher, that's, of course, that doesn't matter. But the innings pitched of 200, earned run average of 2.5 runs or lower, strikeouts 150 or more. Those last two are not that difficult. The winning percentage is not that difficult.
Of course, they're lowering the bar, is what you're saying, yeah.
Well, they have lowered the bar quite a bit. The standards have dropped as the rules have changed. But, when I asked question like, last year, I asked somebody about, you know, how about Shohei Ohtani, and they just like laughed. The guy wins 10 games. Why would we even be thinking about him?
Right.
You got to put, you know, basically said you got to put down the bat if you want to be a Sawamura Award winner. And
poof.
Yeah, and the same with Sugano. 10 games? Are you kidding me? What? Like, are you? You're insulting our intelligence. That was the thing. So. You know, those are the things. But as far as wins go, I think that's really the thing you got to look at for them. If you've got a good ERA, if you strike out a fair number of guys, we've got a guy with 12 wins. We've got Randy Messenger is a great candidate to win because of all the strikeouts, because he does pitch a lot of innings.
Right.
I think. Now Higashihama probably won't get the innings. Kikuchi, Yusei Kikuchi is a good candidate. Again, lots of strikeouts, lots of innings. He's getting lots of, you know, he's kept down his walks this year. Mm-hmm. Of all the pitchers I've mentioned, only nobody has fewer walks than him, other than Sugano. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. And Norimoto, of course, is a potential because of all the strikeouts. But I think the other things are, you know, he doesn't have the good ERA.
No, he doesn't. The thing that he has is this tendency to get knocked around once in a while, and he mm-hmm. has had that a couple years now. Where he just experiences some bad games. And remember, he had that strikeout string of mm-hmm. 8 games, I think it was, consecutive mm-hmm. games where he had at least 10 strikeouts. And that was all fine and good, and he won a lot of games during that stretch. But since then, right. he hasn't been that guy anymore. And his record is good. It's 10-3, but... You know, those 3 games, I think, they kind of stand out, the ones, because he always gives up a lot of runs, and they let him, you know, Nashida, the manager, leaves him out there to decide the game. So it's,
yeah, because...
He's their ace, so...
Yeah, and it doesn't really cost them, so it's again, and I like that. You know, if he's if it's the fifth inning, and you got a 4-run lead, and you figure, well, he might give up a couple of runs, but... I want to save an inning for the bullpen and let the starter take it. That makes perfect sense, you know, if he hasn't thrown 100 pitches. And I like that because, you know, who cares about a Sawamura award when you're trying to win a pennant for the team?
That's true. I mean, I'm talking about the games where he's given up runs early and they just keep sending him out there. But I want to talk about some other guys.
To talk about those other guys.
Well, yeah, I want to surprise people who've been listening to the show for years and years, and I want to say that my number one candidate for the Sawamura Award this year is Yusei Kikuchi. And, you know, I've harped on him the whole time he's been a professional.
Oh, I see. It's a surprise coming out of your mouth.
Out of my mouth, yes.
Okay. It wouldn't be a surprise coming out of mine, but for you, yeah, okay.
For me, yes. Yeah.
I think even this spring you said you weren't quite, you said you were less unsold on him than you had been in the past, but you still weren't completely sold.
I don't remember what I said.
Okay, good. I don't either, so we'll just skip it. Good.
Yeah, there are other people. In fact, one of the guys, Coaster Freak, tweeted and said he went back and listened to the Pacific League Prediction Show and talked about stuff that I said in that I don't remember. So I'm going to have to go back and listen to it myself when I get a few moments. But I do remember that I picked the
Lions. You got children. You think you've got sleep surprise finding a few moments. Good luck with that.
Yeah, I do remember that I picked the Lions as my surprise team to finish second. So they, you know, they keep making a push, even though they lost tonight. If they keep making a push, maybe they can make that happen. But anyway, Miles Michaelis is the guy I wanted to surprise you with. And I looked at the numbers, and he's not there. He's not leading in anything per se. He's not at the top. But he's there across the board in everything. He's got a lot of innings. He's got a lot of strikeouts. He has a good record. He might have too many losses. If he can straighten out the winning percentage, I think that would put him closer to the running.
And I think,
but he's right there on the cusp.
You know what he's going to need is a couple of complete games.
Sure, but he's not going to get him with the Giants. I think if he gets into the eighth inning, I think he's done.
The only guy with the Giants is going to get complete games is Sugano and perhaps Taguchi. They might let him.
But I don't think he's going to get complete games, but he has been very effective. The ERA is on the high side again, but it might be because he just unlucky with the defense. And that defense, I mean, I've seen a couple games where he's been on the mound where they just haven't made some simple plays. So
yeah, I saw. I was looking at him, and again, I think your assessment of it is accurate. There's a lot of areas where he just needs that little extra boost.
Yeah,
he's close everywhere.
Yes, exactly.
But
okay. I think the top two guys are for me, it's Randy Messenger of the Tigers, and it's Yusei Kikuchi. And I know Messenger's ERA is a little bit high, but he has so many strikeouts. He leads the league in strikeouts, and he's just been dominating. He's right behind Sugano in innings. pitch. So he's going to be right there. He'd be my man. And then I think my number one guy is Kikuchi. And I do want to give out a shout-out to Dennis Sarfate. I know he can't win this award. But he has been very effective. And of course, I talked to him, and he had a bad game. And then the Saturday night game, blown save. But again, I blame Kudo for that because he didn't bring him in to start the inning. He brought him in with the bases loaded and nobody out to try to put out a fire that was raging out of control almost. And I thought he did a good enough job to save the game in that respect. And they ended up winning the game. So
how come you weren't at that meeting to tell him?
I was asleep too.
As would I have been.
All right. Let's make a seamless transition and continue talking about pitching and talk about the Hitoki Iwase record. The Dragons reliever tied the record for most appearances by a pitcher on Friday night in a victory over the Giants at Tokyo Dome, and the Dragons won 6-5 in 10 innings. And he actually was presented, he got a present. He was the winner of the game.
Wow, cool.
Getting one out. I think he threw six pitches. Not even that.
That's efficiency is what that is.
That's just wins being frivolous.
Okay, almost frivolous meaning. Rooms, out of the room. Go stand against the wall. You frivolous wins.
Yeah, well, you frivolous victory, you. Now, he's the all-time saves leader in Japan with 403, and he matched former Hankyu pitcher Tetsuya Yoneda's MPB record, and Yoneda set the record in his 22nd year. And Iwase is in his 19th year, and he missed all of 2015, Iwase did.
Yeah, that Yoni, the guy, what's he in the Hall of Fame for? He can't even beat a reliever. Well, you know, I tell people this, and I mentioned, was talking to my colleague about this, but recently I've been going back and looking at, like, really old games, you know, from the late 50s, not really old, not like 30s, 40s. Stuff, but 1958, 1960, late 60s, early 70s. One of the things that surprised me, and I've heard this about the majors too, because you have this impression that, you know, pitch counts were never a part of the equation. Now, what happened is in Japan, pitch counts became a problem in the 90s, really in the late 80s and 90s, when starting pitchers stopped relieving. Because soon as starting pitchers stopped relieving, they just said, no, your job is just to go finish the game. You know, go out there and throw a complete game. We don't care if it takes you 230 pitches to do it. But it used to be that a starting pitcher would, you know, he'd start on Monday, and he might go, if the first sign of trouble, if the guy wasn't cruising, they'd yank him out of that game and then let him sit, you know, work out of the bullpen for a couple of days and then bring him in to start another game. And they weren't throwing side sessions in between.
Right. Okay.
So they weren't. So the point being that, you know, oh, yeah, there were games when the guy, you know, there were complete games when the guy threw 150 or 160 pitches or something. But generally, starters would often get yanked in the first inning. Guys were not throwing a lot of pitches. Guys were throwing many fewer pitches than we're used to seeing now. But having said that, yeah, these guys were pitching four times a week. As you know, they might complete a game and pitch twice in relief and have one start that was three innings long. You know, it was a whole different game.
Just so ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, ridiculous, but that's the way it was. And so it's like when Tomoyuki Kubota of the Tigers tied the record of Kazuhisa Inoue for games in a season. And they were going, wow, it's such an honor to be mentioned with Inoue, and we're kind of different pitchers. And I'm saying, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because nobody would notice a guy who pitched, you know, four innings a week was different from the guy who was pitching 320 innings every year.
Nobody'd notice, oh, yeah.
Yeah, no. Except they both. Neither of them had a neck, but other than that, there wasn't much to, much difference between those two.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, it's a great record for Iwase. A remarkable achievement for a player who has not only battled opponents, he's battled his own physical ailments.
Yeah, he's got a crooked spine. That's basically he's had to deal with on a daily basis. Okay, though, at least that's what Shigekazu Mori, the Dragon's manager, told me several years ago.
Mm-hmm. And so. I mean, obviously he was the inner hero interview after that game, and you can see that he's just not comfortable in the limelight. He's been quiet. I have rarely heard him in hero interviews, and a couple have been, you know, when he had gotten his 200th save, and when he got save number 300, and when he got save number 400, and they had him out there on the podium, and he was talking at that time. But the other day, I think it just really caught him off guard. I don't think he thought he was going to have to come into that game. They had the closer on the mound, and he couldn't close it out, and so they brought him in, and he got him out of a jam. And like I said, he only threw 6 pitches. They took him out of the game after that. And I think it was Sobue who was the guy who actually saved it, but he saved it for him. And the baseball gods looked down and smiled upon him with the victory for that. But but he's also had to add a little bit to his arsenal. Like I said, injuries and ineffectiveness kept him off the mound in 2015. So I know recently he's got this cutter that he's been using. He's been throwing change-ups. He's basically turned into Masahiro Yamamoto in a relief role. He'll throw anything now. It used to be a long time ago when he first came up, it was fastball sliders, mostly slider, and nobody could hit him. And he's just had to evolve and change himself. And he somehow is effective this year. And someone said, I was listening to one of the radio broadcasts earlier this season, and they said he has to come back next year and go for 1,000 appearances. He just has to. And I'm like, you can't say that. He might be done after this year because his body's going to fall apart. But been such a great pitcher for a long time, so it was really fun to see him experience that at 42.
Yeah, well, congratulations is all I can think of. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, now let's talk about the players of the month for July. Yep. They're going to come out this week and should be really fun pickings, except for the fact that one guy isn't going to be on the list who probably should be, right?
Yeah, sure. Because, I think about 5 or 6 years ago, they decided, maybe it was the NPB for the NPB website, that Daiichi Seimei, I think it's the Daiichi Seimei, Nippon Seimei, it's some insurance company, is the sponsor for the monthly MVP. And they decided to give, rather than once a month, let's get a little more publicity for this and let's do it twice a month. So they announced their candidates. And they used to even have, you could pick a candidate and you pick a winner, they'd send you a postcard or something. But they have on the 20th of the month, they list the candidates, and then they select the winner from among those candidates. Well, the problem is that in the Central League for the player of the month, read the hitter of the best hitting statistics producer, the best triple crown hitting statistics.
You see what you people have done? You have confused Jim Allen to the point where he doesn't even know what the award is anymore.
Well, nobody knows what the award is. So it's basically they take the guy with the best triple crown hitting statistics of the month and give it to him. But Ballantyne didn't particularly have a good start to the month. And on the 19th of July, he was hitting .273 with 5 homers. And then after that, he just went on a tear. And, and so basically we have two guys who are just – we have – two guys in the Central League among the hitters who just had superb months, and one of them is going to win, and I'm going to guess it's going to be Masayuki Kuwahara, the center fielder of the DeNA Bay Stars, because essentially they had months of the same offensive quality. I know that Delta Graphs, or perhaps it was another Sabermetric website, posted that that Kuwahara had created more runs, but Kuwahara also made more outs. But, of course, the people who select the awards don't care about defense, which I do. I'd pick Kuwahara because he plays center field well enough, and Ballantyn plays left and not so great. But they won't pick him because of that, and of course there are other issues. But Kuwahara is a good choice anyway. I think I'd be happy with him as player of the month. But it's kind of weird that they can't pick Ballantyn because
they
left him off the exactly. They left him off the ballot essentially.
And then the pitcher, I think, is pretty obvious in Sugano. He hasn't lost in so long, and just had a great streak of scoreless innings and. It's been fantastic.
He was 4-0 in July with a 0.72 WHIP and 9.31 strikeout to 9.31 strikeouts per nine innings. I'm going to switch to the pitchers of the month in the Pacific League. Is kind of interesting. Now Dennis Surfate had really a big month. He had 11 saves and a 0.50 WHIP, which of course those guys don't understand. And he lost a game and he allowed a run. So, you know, you typically relievers who allow a run never win the award. You lose a game. No, that's terrible. Instead, there's Yusei Kikuchi, the aforementioned Yusei Kikuchi, 3-0, 0.81 ERA, 0.99 WHIP, and strikeouts per nine innings like a closer, 13.7. He also threw a shutout, so I'm guessing Kikuchi.
The hitter.
And now's the fun.
Yeah.
Now's the fun one. What do you got to say about this, Mr. Gibson?
I don't know. I don't look at the numbers. I'm just trying to go through my head right now. I would go with Genda. Sosuke Genda.
Would you? That's interesting. He wouldn't quite make my list. I was thinking the two guys that interested me the most, and again, as I mentioned, all the Lions guys are leading the world. But I thought the two most interesting players this month are Yuki and Nagita. Okay. Now he had he led the PL in walks and batting average, 391.
Oh, I know the other guy. Just hit me. But I don't know if he was.
Oh, wow.
Go ahead.
I hope he didn't hit you. He might drive you pretty far. Okay. And he posted a 507 on base percentage. But then the other guy who's really interesting is a Shogo Akiyama.
Oh, okay.
And he led the league in runs, tied with two Lions teammates with 16 and RBIs, 19.
You know they don't care about runs, yeah.
And they know they don't care about runs, and they can't spell on base percentage. So. It's a tough choice. I'm really tough, but the RBIs and who knows? You know, they'll probably pick Akiyama and then say, and he stole two bases too.
Right, they'll throw that in there, yeah.
Because they do count steals. They do notice stolen bases and home runs and RBIs and batting average. And sometimes slugging average, but you pretty much never see on base percentage or runs scored, or doubles or anything like that.
Thinking Yafet Amador was going to be in there, but he didn't hit enough average wise. But he had the 8 home runs and the 15 RBI, so I thought that would be there.
Yeah. I would again, of course, sure, because they don't care that the guy's really doesn't have a position.
right. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
All right, let's move along. A couple of notes. Naoki Miyanishi of the Fighters gets props for becoming the second pitcher in MPB history with 250 holds. He joins Tetsuya Yamaguchi of the Giants. And then the other note is Shinnosuke Abe reaching, he's nearing 2,000 hits, and there's no doubt he's going to get it this week. And I don't know, we'll talk about it next week where he... goes down in history in terms of other catchers, and I still consider him a catcher even though he's not playing the position anymore. But
he's done, he did enough to catch. He's not one of these guys just caught as a hobby or nothing,
right? As a hobby. All right, we've got two questions, so let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes from our buddy Max in LA, and he says, any chance that Louis Okoye gets playing time on the Eagles' top squad this year? And this is the question that we held over from last week.
Never happened.
During the week, and I'm so glad I held it over because I was going to say no, but he was brought up to the top team. I mean, this is a team beset by injuries, of course, and I think they actually have enough outfielders, but I think they just wanted to bring somebody to spell someone else and just bring something new to the team right now. And so, and he was hitting .317 on the farm. Now, he started the season with an injury to a finger. I don't remember what it was, if it was broken or do you remember what it was? It was the ring finger on his left, on his right hand. And he had soreness and everything and had to have an operation. So I don't even remember what it was. Maybe it was a torn ligament. Anyway, he was away and he played 25 games on the farm and had hit .317 and was doing well. So they brought him up, and I was actually, like I said, was going to say no, but I said, well, if they bring him up, they have to play him. They can't sit him on the bench and have him do nothing. And so they brought him up, and he's played, and he's got a few hits, and knocked in a big run tonight on Saturday in a victory over the Marines. So I hope he plays a lot. I honestly do. I would like to see him play, but they've got a lot of talented outfielders. I just don't think that he's going to get steady time out there unless another guy goes down with an injury, but we'll have to see. But I'm so
can
glad
you ask that me that didn't... question again. Oh yes, absolutely, he'll be there.
Okay, I'm so glad I didn't answer the question last week because I would have said no.
Okay.
All right, and the second question comes from @MMulin, and he says, do you think Darvish to LA, even as just a rental, and we're talking about you, Darvish, who was traded to the Dodgers this past week, impacts Shohei Ohtani's interest in the Dodgers? Jim?
Well, I saw Bob Nightingale did a whole story about this, saying that the Dodgers are now the favorites to get Shohei Ohtani because of Yu Darvish. But, if Bob Nightingale could write like you, he'd say something about you. But
R.R.
That's my Marx Brothers shout out there. The I think it got nothing to do with anything. I've heard stories. I personally, if you ask me, and I'll write what I put on Twitter, which was he's going to go the place where he thinks he has the best chance to succeed as both a hitter and pitcher, and where he's most convinced the team wants the same thing. They've talked about, he might go to Texas because Darvish is there. I think he might go to Texas because they're the most interested in him. Other things involved. Another possibility, a thought occurred to me today, which is good. I like it when thoughts occur to me. It doesn't happen all the time. That, all the talk about, and we talk a lot to players about this, about, what Ohtani should do. But I have this funny feeling that, he's going to go over there and they're going to see him hit. They're going to, the coaches and managers are going to see him hit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to say to themselves, not, well, this guy should focus on pitching, but how do we get this guy into the lineup?
Mm.
This is a real possibility because he's young.
Yeah, and we've heard that from some of the guys we've interviewed is, this guy's the real deal. We've heard that phrase.
Right.
This guy can really hit. This guy's got quick hands.
There's a huge difference between the scouts telling us he can hit, but he's more valuable as a pitcher. But I'll tell you, if he's less valuable as a hitter, that's a high bar for him. because they're talking about him as a top of the rotation guy.
Right.
In the majors. And to say he's less valuable as a hitter is like saying, well, he's not Rembrandt, he's not a Picasso as a hitter, he's just one of those other old masters whose names we forget. But but the point is, anyway, so that occurred to me that he could go to camp and they could be thinking, yeah, pitcher, 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 and then they see him hit and say, oh, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so my take on it was that Shohei's interest in the Dodgers is not going to change it's completely unchanged and unaffected by the acquisition of Yu Darvish. I think the Dodgers, I mean, you look at the skill set that Ohtani brings, and he can bring that to any team. It doesn't matter who the teammates are, so to speak. It matters how the management is going to use him, upper management and the field manager. And Darvish being a teammate might, I don't know, it might influence his decision. But I just, you know, if I were going to go over, I would do what's best for me, not what's best for another player. And just because Darvish is on the team or just because Kenta Maeda is on the team wouldn't impact my decision in terms of what it's going to mean for me. Now, it would impact my decision in terms of, okay, well, there's more than one Japanese player on the team, so am I going to have my own interpreter, or is this guy going to have to do the work for two people, or is it even three if Darvish hangs around?
No, I think they can afford more than one.
And I think there's no limit.
This is not Japan where there's only so many people can be on the bench.
Right. So, you know, I don't know. It might make it easier. It might make it more difficult. I don't know. But I do know the Dodgers have a problem. They have too much good major league pitching and not enough great major league pitching. And I think there's going to be some changes in the offseason. They've got to turn some of these good pitchers into either prospects or draft picks, and so I think they're going to thin it out after this season, no matter what happens. I don't know that Maeda and Ryu Hyun-jin are going to be around, because I think they're going to have to get rid of some of these guys. They've got a bunch of guys who are really good, but nobody's great, and they've got to go out and get another great pitcher.
Okay, Dodgers, you heard it here from somebody who cares.
From somebody who cares and wants to see it happen. Yeah. Okay. All right, guys. Thank you very much for the questions. We appreciate them. Anyone else with a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter @JBWPodcast with the hashtag High Heat, or leave us a message on the Facebook page. Good or bad, we take the criticism as well as the praise.
Well, I appreciate the constructive criticism.
Any kind of criticism, it's fine. We want to make the show better. We want to make it better for you guys, and we want you guys to participate in what we're discussing, because it's all about Japanese baseball. It's not about us. All right, guys, we appreciate you listening to another long show. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.